Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel. You're listening to The Jewish Truth Bomb with Lenny Goldberg.
Hey, this is Lenny Goldberg, and thanks for joining me on this Passover holiday, a special Chol Hamoed special. The essence of Passover is the commandment of telling and retelling, of passing down to our children the story of Passover, because Passover, it's the beginning of Judaism, the birth of Judaism, and we have to pass it on to our sons and our daughters, tell them what happened. We pass on the story. That's the commandment, to transmit the faith in Hashem from father to son, from generation to generation. And the Jewish faith is based on this tradition passed on from father to son, going back to previous generations until you get to Mount Sinai, to the generation of Mount Sinai, who saw with their own eyes the great miracles, the Exodus, the revelation at Har Sinai. And that's why it says in Deuteronomy chapter 34, Ma'amash at the end, it says that God did these things, le'enei kol Yisrael, in the eyes of all of Israel. That's actually the last verse of the Torah. What is the last verse? It says that no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, who the Lord knew face to face, who did all those wonders and miracles in Egypt, and he did it be'enei kol Yisrael. He did it in the sight of all of Israel. Why is that so important to stress? In the sight of all of Israel. And Rabbi Kahana writes that this is the foundation of Judaism, that all those signs and those wonders and the slavery and the entire story of the Exodus, it was done deliberately in the sight of all Israel. They were personally present. They were active participants in it. They were witnesses to it. It's not like we believe it because Moses said so. It's not because Moses was a great man that we believe in Judaism. It has nothing to do with Moses. He was a shaliach. And Moses isn't even mentioned in the Haggadah. To stress that point, it's not dependent on him. And that's what makes Judaism so different from the other religions. We're not basing it on the word of Moses. It's not like Christianity where you have to take some person's word for it, that Yeshua was the Messiah. Any false prophet can come along and make claims and confuse the masses. And we're not like Islam, where Muhammad, the false prophet, comes along and invents a new religion called Islam. Both of these religions, Christianity and Islam, they come with false declarations. And in order to believe in their claims to their religion, you have to put your full faith in them personally. You have to put your full faith in Jesus or Muhammad. With us, it's not like that. We're not putting our faith in Moses. We saw what happened. And never did it happen, ever before. Never in the world has there arisen a person like Moses, who came in the name of God, who proved himself with miracles and wonders over such an extended period of time. And most importantly, though, le'enei kol Yisrael, before the sight of Israel. They personally saw the miracles. It's not like you have to believe blindly in Moshe Rabbeinu. All of Israel saw it, not just a chosen few, not just a couple of apostles or elders or select individuals, but all of Israel, men, women, children, they all saw the terror in Egypt that, as it says, even a slave girl at the Red Sea saw wonders that Isaiah and Ezekiel and all the other prophets never saw. And that's why Judaism is really the basis for Christianity and Islam. They had to build on what they call the Old Testament. They have to start with that because that's the basis for their religion too. Because that was the only time in the history of the world that God revealed himself at Mount Sinai. Everybody witnessed it. So Christianity and Islam, they have to start from that. Yes, Christianity added another book to the Old Testament. They called it the New Testament. And Islam changed it. But they still had to start from something. They started from that revelation because that was real. It was before hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who witnessed it. It reminds me of a conversation I had the other day with two fellas from my settlement. And they said that 9/11 was an inside job. A lot of people say 9/11 was a conspiracy. Okay. But they told me something I never heard before. They said that the planes, they never crashed into the buildings. It was a hoax. It was like a Photoshop thing. That even though on television, on the news, it looks like two planes crashed into these buildings, it didn't really happen. They photoshopped it somehow. That's what these guys told me. very conspiratorial, we can say. Now, that's quite a thing to claim because, I mean, there were hundreds of thousands of people in Manhattan that morning. Now, I've heard people say that they ran from the buildings and all that. I would like to find one of them, just one, who actually saw, he saw the plane hit those buildings. He saw it. And if I ever found that person, I'd like to bring him over to my friends and say, look, this guy saw the planes hit the buildings. Come on. Anyway, somehow it reminded me of the revelation on Mount Sinai, where we're going by personal accounts. It was witnessed by millions, and we passed that down from generation to generation. Not relying on blind faith, but our forefathers saw it, and they passed it on. Now, when we retell the story of the Exodus, as the mitzvah is, the Ganatach Lebincha, you have to tell the story to your children. Because of the long, excruciating exile, when we tell the story on the Seder night, we've forgotten so many of its basic lessons because the exile turned us from a nation to just a mere religion. Judaism has become a religion. In Hebrew, the word religion is dat. Do you know that the word dat is not in the entire Torah, the word dat, except for the verse Eish dat la'amo, where dat means law. And so Judaism has been so twisted and perverted, and we're the victims of this distorted Judaism, and it shows on the Seder night, because a lot of times we're not passing down the basic lessons of Passover. Remember, Passover is the festival of national faith, of a free people leaving in exile for a home of their own in the land of Israel. But Jews of the ghetto and the exile, they can't understand that. And so Passover gets passed over, so to speak. And so now, basing myself upon the teachings of Rabbi Meir Kahana, here are some major lessons of Passover. Number one, Passover is the holiday of negating the exile, of throwing off the yoke of the slavery of Galut and going to the freedom and the spirituality of Eretz Israel. We didn't just escape bondage on Passover. God promised another thing. They'd go to the land of Israel too. And this is what the Ibn Ezra says in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 4, verse 10. This is what the Ibn Ezra says. For the Lord knew that Israel could not observe his commandments properly if they remained in the lands that ruled over them. Listen again. The Lord knew that Israel could not observe his commandments, kira'ui, properly if they remained in the lands that ruled over them. You can't observe the commandments properly. And that's because no people can live as a minority in another's land and not be influenced by the majority's foreign culture. It infiltrates your mind. It infiltrates your views, the radio, the streets, the media, the whole atmosphere is going to affect you. Now, just to give a crude example of how the culture you're in defines you and impacts you. Like just in my case, I made Aliyah. I was 27 years old when I left America. And why is it that I love baseball and basketball and NFL, but I'm not interested in soccer? Soccer is boring for me. I can't stand watching it. I can't play it for beans. How can you not pick up a ball with your hands and feel it? How can you control something with your feet? That's a sport. Everybody's watching the Euro and whatever that cup is called, and I'm bored by soccer. You know why? Because I grew up in America watching baseball, football, and basketball. That's what I'm used to. And so God did two things. He freed us from slavery, but that was for the purpose of creating a holy and special people that would create a Torah society in its own land without foreign influences. That's lesson number one. Another lesson is that not only is a Jew supposed to be in Israel, but Passover teaches us that a Jew who doesn't go to the land won't be allowed to survive in the exile. And these are the words of the rabbis in the Tanchuma, Midrash Tanchuma, Parsha Ve'era. It says like this, why did God bring the plague of darkness? Because there were among the Jews many sinners who had a good life in Egypt. They had honor and they had wealth and they did not wish to leave. So the Almighty said, if I bring a blow on them openly and they die, the Egyptians will say, hey, just as he struck us down, he struck them down too. Therefore, he brought darkness upon Egypt for 3 days so that they could die and be buried with no one knowing. And that, by the way, is why it says that only Chomesh came out of Egypt. Only 1/5 of the Jews left Egypt. All the rest died during the plague of darkness. And so that message echoes through the ages to the Jews who remain in the exile, enjoying honor and wealth many times, the message is, it is not going to last. Darkness will eventually descend upon you. Another lesson, faith in Hashem, who's stronger than Pharaoh and the American president too. The whole holiday of Passover is named after the Paschal lamb that the Jews were commanded to slaughter and eat in Egypt. What is the Paschal lamb sacrifice? Well, the Jews take the god of their Egyptian masters, tie it up for 4 days in their master's face. Remember Tag Mechir, price tagging? Well, this is like price tagging on steroids. Now imagine if the Jews degraded the Muslim religion that way today, if they flaunted victory by mocking them, if, let's say, we remove the mosque from the Temple Mount. You know that every Jew, from right to left, from Orthodox to Reform, would go ballistic on you. But Passover teaches us differently. In order to sanctify the name of God of Israel, before the nations who mocked him and his people who did not know him, the Jew was ordered to take and degrade the religious symbol of the Egyptians and do it as publicly as possible. As the verses say, eat the flesh roasted like a shish kebab. Don't cut it up. Don't boil in water. Roasted with fire, whole, so everybody could see you're roasting their deity. And so there's no issue here provoking the Gentile, litkarot bagoyim, the nations are being agitated. That's not a problem here, even though this concept of not provoking the nations, that is something so exilic that so many religious Jews hold by. We're not allowed to provoke the nations? What are you talking about? The holiday of Passover is named after the Korban Pesach, which was done entirely to provoke the nations. And finally, we have the lesson that when sanctifying God's name, there is no compromise. It has to be complete and absolute. And we know this from the story of the Exodus. Because when Pharaoh kept refusing the Israelites permission to take their children with them and their cattle, he had been refusing all along. But then with the plague of darkness, he breaks down and he agrees. And this is what he says in Exodus chapter 10. Go serve the Lord, only let your sheep and cattle remain behind. Even your children may go with you. Think about that. The Jews have been slaves for decades. They've suffered. They cried out to God to free them. And finally, Pharaoh agrees to let them leave. Freedom. He's only got one minor condition. You know, to save face. Leave your sheep and cattle. So picture the scene. The Jews are rejoicing. They're about to leave. And then, to their horror, Moses shakes his head and he tells Pharaoh, no, no. You too will give us sacrifices and offerings, and our flocks will go with us. There shall not remain a hoof. Wow. Is there anything more extreme and fanatical than Moses refusing to compromise even an inch? Give him the sheep, Moses. Give him the flocks. For freedom and peace, you got to compromise. We're talking about sheep and goats. But Moses understood what Kiddush Hashem is all about. It's total surrender and capitulation, because only then do the nations admit his acceptance of the Lord as the one and only. He can't dictate any conditions. And when sanctifying God's name, it's got to be open, unafraid, and proud and tall. How do we know? Well, you have the 10th plague, strikes Egypt. You got panic and terror. In every home, there's death. And Pharaoh now, he surrenders totally. He says, go, take your cattle, take your children, take whatever you need to take. It's midnight now. He races to Moses and he cries out, just go. Take your sheep, take your cattle. Oh, finally, surely now Moses will be satisfied. Even a fanatic like Moses at this point will accept this. Nope. What does Moses say? It says in the Midrash Tanhuma, what are we, thieves that we leave in the middle of the night? We're going to go out of here with a mighty arm before the eyes of Egypt. And so the lesson is clear that in order to sanctify God's name, by its very essence, it's got to be a declaration that he is supreme, that no power on earth can touch him or those who trust in him. And so doing things behind the scenes, being non-provocative, it's a contradiction in terms. You can't have a Kiddush Hashem, a sanctification of God's name, which is a public thing. You can't do it quietly. That would be the very antithesis of it. Now, why is this concept so important of not compromising and saying things straight? Because we've all become politicians. You're always hearing people say, yeah, yeah, it's true, but you can't say it. That's what they said to Rabbi Kahn all the time. Play the political game, compromise, play it smart. Al tia tzodek, tia chacham. That's what they would say. Don't be right, be smart. And so everyone's become such a politician. And so we have to notice what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing here. He's really acting so extreme. We should stop being concerned with how extreme we may sound if we say that we have to keep the Gaza Strip because God gave it to us, just like the rest of the land of Israel. But few will actually say that because it'll sound like some fundamentalist, extremist, fanatic. So what do we talk about? We talk about bitachon, for security we have to keep it. We have to hold on to Gaza for bitachon, security, so they don't shoot missiles into our cities. Of course that's true, but that's not the reason. And the thing is, once you start talking truth that way, you educate. When you start giving that message that it's God given to us and it's a chilul Hashem to give it away, yeah, that message may not be the consensus. You lose the consensus. Everybody's worried about the consensus. Say something that everybody can understand, that we have to hold on to these places for security. We want to be in the consensus. But what happens is no message is being transmitted to the nation, the message of Kiddush Hashem, Chilul Hashem, that Eretz Yisrael was given to us by God. Because once you instill that message, then people will slowly understand we can't give away the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount belongs to us. So we have to change the narrative and talk truth and talk God and not worrying about always being in the consensus and not worrying about sounding extreme. And so those are some of the big lessons of Passover. And before signing off, I wanted to bring a fabulous midrash, which is connected to the parshas we've been reading about Tazria, Matzora, the whole issue of leprosy, where you go to the priest and he checks you, etc. There's a fabulous midrash that really encapsulates what I would call the Jewish idea. And this is what it says in Midrash Tanchuma, Parsha Tazria, the sixth midrash. It says like this: Maseh b'kohen echad. It once happened that there was a priest, Shaya ro'et negayim, he would check the skin disorders that the Parsha talks about. That's what he did. He checked the disorders. Matayado. But what happened is he was broke. He lost his money. Bikesh litzet l'chutz laretz. So he decided to go to chutz laretz, to leave Israel. Like a lot of Israelis think there's more money in chutz laretz, driving a cab somewhere, what they used to call yordim. They leave the land of Israel to make some parnasa. That's what he wanted to do. Karalishta wamala. So he called his wife and he said to her, Bishvil shebnei adam regilim lavoetzli lirot ed negaim. Because people come to me all the time. I have clients, I have patients that depend on me to check their skin disorders, right? Kasher la letzetem alehem. I don't feel good just leaving. They need me. I need someone to cover for me while I'm away. I can't leave my patients without a good doctor. I can't leave them hanging. So listen, I'm going to teach you the tricks of the trade, how it works. He says, Voi, come here, Shetei Ruah Negaim, and I'll teach you about this whole science of the leprosy, the skin disorders, what you should do. And now explains it to her. Imra ita sa'arosh shel adam sheyavesh mayan shelo. If you see that the skin hairs of a person is dry, know that his mayan is dry. That is, there's a well underneath each cuticle of hair, which it nourishes from. And if that hair is dry, that means the well is dried up. And then you'll know that he has been stricken with this tzara'at. And he continues, because every single hair on your body, every cuticle, Bara lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu mayan b'fnei atzmo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created for each hair coming out of your body a spring or a source of nourishment that this cuticle of hair drinks from. Yavesh mayan, yavesh seyar. If the well is dried up, no, then that cuticle of hair is going to dry up too. Those are the instructions he gives us so she can cover for him while he's away. Amra lo ishto. So his wife said to him, Uma im kol se'ar v'se'ar, bara lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu mayan b'fnei atzmo. Wait a minute. If Hashem created for every hair a source of nourishment where that hair can nourish from, atash atah ben adam, and you being a human being, kamaseh rot yesh b'cha, you have lots of hairs and lots of membranes ubanecha meparnasim al yadecha, and you give livelihood and parnasa to your children, lo kol sheken, she is a menlecha kodesh baruch hu parnasa, then all the more so, won't the kodesh baruch hu provide for you parnasa? Lefikach lo hinicha oto letzet lechutz laretz, and so she did not let him leave Israel. What a tremendous story we have here, because we see something so common. The Kohen, he was so used to doing it all the time, it was so mechanical for him, that he didn't see what his wife saw. She's like b'chinat bal tshuva. She's like somebody who heard it for the first time, and she says, wow, that's amazing. Every cuticle of hair, every membrane has a source of nourishment. Unbelievable. Hashem's supervision is so precise. And so she's telling her husband, if Hashem has such exact, perfect supervision, his hashkacha in the world is so awesome, what are you worried about? Because again, he never thought of it that way. He's so mechanical. For him, it was all rote. Like most of us when we do mitzvahs, we don't really think of the ideas behind it. But she chapped the idea behind it, the idea of divine supervision, that Hashem is watching out for us. And by the way, don't leave Eretz Yisrael. That's also embedded into this story. And so should we only merit the simple, pure faith of the wife of this priest, who with such purity and clarity understood, because this is true for all of the mitzvot, they manifest an idea that stands behind it. And the mitzvah is just a physical manifestation of that. And so on the Seder night when we reclined to show we're free men, we're supposed to act like free men. It's not supposed to be some mechanical thing like some chimpanzee who's reclining at the table. But believe it, we're free. We have a Kodesh Baruch Hu on our side. We're not slaves to Washington or to any flesh and blood. So again, we have to take these symbols out of the realm of symbolism and apply it to our everyday lives. And with that, Chag Sameach, I'll be back for a special Shvi Shel Pesach podcast. Stay tuned.
Shalom, this is Nadia Matar from the Sovereignty Movement. At a time when there is so much disinformation, you have to know who to listen to know what really is going on in Israel. Israel News Talk Radio is the radio where you can know that what you hear is the truth.
Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.